It's time for Kennedy for Alabama, a political talk show where we discuss the real issues impacting our sweet home, Alabama.
I love this country as much, if not more, than you do. And don't you ever forget that.
And now your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
Good evening to the FM Talk 106.5 listening audience in Mobile and the News Talk 92.5 FM listening audience in Huntsville. My name is Robert Kennedy Jr., and this is Kennedy for Alabama. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode. We're really excited about tonight's program, so let's get to it. Tonight, we have four fantastic members of this evening's conversation team. The first is Ms. Aquilyn Kennedy, Executive Producer and Chief Brand Strategist. The second, joining us by phone, is Alabama State Representative Anthony Daniels, who is the House Minority Leader. The third, joining us in studio, is Dr. Nina Ford Johnson, who is President of the Medical Society of Mobile County. And last but not least is Mr. Ian Blair, who is working the production board and keeping Kennedy for Alabama sounding good on the airwaves. Now for the headline. Tonight's headline comes from AL.com opinion column. It reads, "I wasn't sure about the vaccine, then I got COVID." It was written by Alabama State Representative Anthony Daniels and published on the 28th of June, 2021. And with that, we're going to go to the phone lines. Representative Daniels, are you there?
I am.
Thank you so much for joining us here on Kennedy for Alabama. This is actually an interview that I've wanted to do pretty much as long as we've been running this show. We know that you are a very busy man and that you are double booked tonight, so we really do appreciate you taking the time to spend a few minutes with us.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's jump right into it. So one of the things that we've been focused on here at Kennedy for Alabama is continuing to communicate a message that although we are in a better position compared to where we were a year ago, that COVID is not over. And so I was really interested to read your opinion column and to understand a little bit about your experience. So before we dig into that, how are you feeling now?
I'm feeling much better. For me, the post-COVID effects have, you know, kind of slowly getting back to my normal self, but I'm much better than I was.
Okay, well, that is good to hear. And how is your family self?
Oh, my family's great. You know, it impacted them very mildly.
Okay.
But they're great. They're back at it and back to their normal course of business.
Okay, well, that is great to hear. So tell the listening audience, what was it that motivated you to actually want to put pen to paper and put your opinion in print and make sure that it got out to everybody?
What motivated me is how I, you know, nearly lost my life from COVID, and how it was because of the monoclonal antibodies infusion that really turned me around.
Wow.
But not everyone have access to that. It was before the vaccine was available to the public. And so, you know, for me, anything that could minimize the impact of the virus, or to possibly save a life, you know, I'm all on board. I was just like many Americans were very skeptical about the vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, after, you know, going through this experience, it really opened my eyes. And so now I try to advocate as much as possible for individuals to really protect themselves and protect their families.
Hey, I really appreciate you actually highlighting that, because I know, particularly when we talk about those of us who are in the African-American community, that there is a lot of medical hesitancy and that there were some concerns with the speed with which the vaccine actually went from concept into actually being put into people's arms, so to speak. Was any of that what was influencing your particular hesitancy?
Absolutely. My grandfather was a part of the Tuskegee experiment.
Okay.
And so I'm from close to Macon County. I'm from Bullitt County. Mm-hmm. And so I recall growing up hearing about those stories and reading about it, just like many of the listeners out there.
Sure.
And so it did bring about some hesitancy there. And then our political climate didn't make things better.
Oh, not at all.
And so it made me further skeptical about taking the vaccine and what was going on. But having gone through it myself and experiencing it as a 38-year-old male that works out 4 days a week,
mm-hmm.
You know, it was something that really, you know, just really took me down fast.
Right.
I went from being able to work out, do a high-intensity training the day before for 45 minutes with 15 seconds rest in between sets, to not being able to lift a bag of groceries.
Oh, wow. Wow. That's amazing to think about. And I know we don't normally go public about our ages that often, but for you to be somebody who is in your late 30s, you weren't exactly the prototype of folks that were at the theoretical level supposed to be most impacted by the virus. And so if you're young and healthy, maintaining a healthy lifestyle like you were, you would not necessarily have thought that you were the prototype for the person who would be impacted so significantly.
Absolutely. And you know, you hear about, you see these stories about the vaccination rates across the country, but particularly in communities of color, and the impact for those that really didn't know what it was, that brushed it off as being the flu, right?
Absolutely.
And many of the lives that were lost before we even started reporting the data. And so for me, one life is too much, too many.
Absolutely.
And so for me as a leader, I have to put myself in position to ensure that I'm educating the public on the truth.
Right.
And so, and going through it, it is no hoax. I can tell you that.
Wow.
And in fact, it took me nearly 3 to 4 months to get back to actually being able to work out at the level that I was working out before going down with COVID, experiencing migraines. I never had migraines before this. They were so intense to where it woke me up in the middle of the night.
Oh, wow.
And so that experience has really humbled me, and is really God telling me that, look, you've gone through this. I've spared you. And so it's time for you to do what you can to save lives.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to come to the tail end of our time here together, but there are two things that I'd like you to be able to answer before you take off here. The first is, we know that you are an Alabama state representative and that you represent a different portion of the state than the listeners here in the Mobile, Alabama area. So could you tell the folks what area of the state you represent, please?
Absolutely. I represent Huntsville, Alabama. Our focus is, as you know, space and missile defense. I see that mm-hmm. Mobile, Alabama, our friends down there are focusing and building up their capacity in the aerospace area as well. And so Huntsville, Alabama is where I represent, but I'm from Bullock County, Union Springs, Alabama, small okay. rural community in central Alabama. But in my role as a leader, my job is to represent the interests of all Alabamians.
Mm-hmm.
And I will tell you, Robert, you guys have tremendous leaders in Napoleon Bracey and Barbara Drummond, Adeline Clark, and Sam Jones that fight for the interests of all Mobilians
mm-hmm.
and folks, and that's a part of the a portion of the state. And you have other good leaders as well. But I will tell you, those individuals, if I was in a fight anywhere, I would want to fight with them. I want them to be on my side.
Indeed. And this season, in season 4 of Kennedy for Alabama, we're doing the live show on Thursday nights here in the Mobile DMA, and then we're doing a rebroadcast on 92.5 News Talk up in Huntsville at 770 WVNN as well. So thank you so much for being our first representative from that part of the state to come on and join us here on Kennedy for Alabama. We know you've got to run because you have another engagement. Do you want to do a shout-out about that engagement before you dip?
Absolutely. The Boys and Girls Club of North Alabama. I've seen what they've done for children across America. And here in North Alabama, they're doing the same as they're doing in all across the country, of making a difference in the lives of those young people that wouldn't otherwise have an opportunity to participate in their programming. And so I'm an advocate for them, and I am attending their fundraiser where I serve as a co-chair for their capital campaign to get them a building and also to expand their programs in STEM and workforce development so that we're preparing young people for the future.
All right. Well, Representative Daniels, thank you so much for taking a few minutes to spend some time with us, telling us about your individual experience with COVID and for all the wonderful things you're doing to lead the Democratic House coalition there in the Alabama State House of Representatives. So we will look forward to keeping in contact with you. You take care now.
All right. Thank you, Robin. Thank you for having me.
All right. So those of you who are just joining the program, we had the wonderful opportunity to speak with Alabama State Representative Anthony Daniels, who also serves in the Alabama State House as the House Minority Leader for the Alabama delegation. So now I get to spend a little bit of time talking to my in-studio guest, Dr. Nina Ford Johnson. Welcome to Kennedy for Alabama.
Thank you, Mr. Kennedy and Aquilin and Ian. Glad to be here.
You know, it's interesting. I was wondering, as I was engaging Representative Daniels on one side, I was kind of wondering what you were thinking about from your particular experience being on the front lines every day dealing with COVID and individuals who have contracted it and trying to, you know, do the public service announcements to keep people from contracting it. So just what were your thoughts about his particular segment?
I thought it was sad. I don't think it needs to go to that point where somebody has to get sick to realize that COVID is real and the vaccine does work and it does protect us from getting COVID, and COVID-like disease.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's amazing to think about. So before we go down that path too terribly much, I actually want to take a step back and talk about you a little bit.
Okay.
So I know you've been on Kennedy for Alabama before. We are so glad to be able to welcome you back. But just take a minute and tell the listening audience just kind of where you're from, where you went to school, where you went to medical school, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure. Thank you. I'm originally from Indianapolis, Indiana, and I've been practicing in Mobile County for 10 years as a pediatrician. I work for Infirmary Pediatrics. I am the president of the Medical Society of Mobile County. It's a great time of the year, a great time to actually be president. I'm the fourth African-American president, and so I stand on the shoulders of the first one, which is our former Surgeon General. So I am a mother of three toddlers and a pastor's wife. And so I'm just really glad to be here this evening to discuss what we're going to discuss tonight.
Yeah, I was going to say, you have a lot going on, to put it mildly.
Nice way of putting it.
Yes, yes. And we appreciate you spending some time with us. So let's take a step back, right? So it's the early part of 2020, we start hearing rumblings about this virus and its impacting and stuff like that. So what was kind of happening in the medical community? What were you guys hearing? What were you seeing? And kind of what were your initial reactions to what was happening in the world?
When I first saw that it was in China, I knew it was going to be no time before it was going to be over here.
Oh,
because
wow.
We live in a global community. This is a global society. There is no way that something that it was so isolated at first was not going to stay isolated. It was going to move. And so it was a point of, when are we going to move? When is our action? What's our next action?
Right.
And it was a little slow at first.
To say the least.
And so it leads to the biggest pandemic that all of us have been a part of. And very scary. Physicians were up in arms. We did not know what to do, how to treat it.
Right.
And so on social media, there were so many social media groups formed, mainly Facebook, and a lot of physicians communicating with each other, giving each other protocols on what worked in Washington, the state of Washington, because that's really where it hit first. And so people were giving their protocols on what to do when this happens and what labs to draw and what medications to give. And then, pediatrics, we didn't see too much of it because it was mainly adult. But then it started filtering down to the children. Children are not little adults like people like to think.
Right.
So the treatment that we would give for children may be different from what we would give from adults. What is out there? And so it was very challenging.
I can't even begin to imagine. There were some things that we were going through with some of the consulting work where Aquila and I were literally just trying to find information for our clients to be able to give them some sort of guidance to point in one direction or another. And then, unfortunately, in the whole process, the whole thing got political. So then folks are trying to use it as some sort of litmus test to determine what your level of political support was. So that particular aspect of it I found was a little bit sad as well. So we get through the early days of the whole scramble.
Right.
And then we start going through to this point, which is a point I think that Representative Daniels was bringing up. So now we're starting to hear the rumblings about there's a vaccine.
Correct.
And there are clinical trials going on and stuff like that. So what were you guys hearing kind of during that stage as the vaccine was being developed? What was kind of filtering down to you guys as medical professionals?
You know, I was really excited. Technology was in our favor. I was looking at different podcasts and events that were going on, of course, virtually, and from the vaccine makers and the ones who were the biologists and scientists in the lab talking about the vaccine and how, you know, and I try to encourage our community and educate them that African-Americans, we sat at the table, we were part of the vaccine manufacturers, the people who made up the vaccine. So we were not the ones on the background, or excuse me, outside. We were sitting at the table. And I was telling them about Dr. Kizzy Corbett and how she had been working in the lab since 2016 because she knew that a coronavirus could actually cause a pandemic.
Really?
And so she was ready. Wow. They were ready for it. And so when they saw what happened with the coronavirus when it spiked in China back in 2019, December, that lab was ready to go. And as soon as they received that green light, they started working on it. And that's why it happened so fast. And we have to give credit to where credit is due. So President Trump did the right thing instead of rolling back those regulations on those vaccine trials to letting them happen simultaneously so we could have a vaccine that was ready and available to put in those arms.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that I wanted to highlight was there's no problem getting credit where credit was due.
Correct.
Right? And so if some things had not been put in place with the prior administration, then the current administration wouldn't have had a baton to pick up in the handoff.
Correct.
And so it really the actions of both administrations that actually got us to this point.
Yes.
There were two things that I actually wanted to kind of go off on, one which was said earlier and one that hasn't been mentioned yet. So Representative Daniels referred to the Tuskegee experiments.
Correct.
Now, I know sometimes from a historical standpoint, this is something that folks aren't comfortable talking about, but I think it's very important for the listening audience to know what it is that the Tuskegee experiments were and just kind of what the time frame was. So just to bring everybody up to speed, the Tuskegee experiments were in place from about the mid-30s until the early 1970s, where the federal government was tracking the long-term effects of syphilis, and that was basically put into African-Americans around the Tuskegee area just so people could monitor the long-term effects. Am I pretty much summarizing that correctly?
For the most part, they did not give those people syphilis. They did not treat them. And that was the problem. They knew once they found out that they had treatment and that it worked, they still withheld treatment from them.
Gotcha.
And that's horrible.
And that's the medical ethics issue of knowing that somebody's sick and not providing them with the treatment in order to study the long-term effects of the disease.
Yes.
And as I mentioned, it started in the 30s and continued until the 70s, and then it actually hit the newspapers and it got out. So when we talk about skepticism and reluctance within the African-American community, a lot of it is sourcing to that. In particular, given the fact that it happened here in Alabama, is one of the things that's fueling that. I just wanted to make sure that I got that out. The other thing that really struck me was I know there was an activity that you and a number of alums from med school had done to try to get some correct information out, and that session was facilitated by our very own Aquilyn Kennedy. So can you take the time and just tell the listening audience about that particular event, what caused you guys to get together, and what it was you were attempting to accomplish?
Thank you so much. And I thank Aquilyn over and over again for helping with that.
Thank you over and over again for doing it. Thank you.
My best friend said, you know who the real rock star that evening was? She said, it was Aquilyn. I said, you were totally right. because I brought together all majority of my classmates from different specialties across the country so we can for my community and people to know that African-American physicians are seeing this illness and that it affects a variety of body symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just pediatrics. It's not just adults. It can affect your kidneys. It can affect your heart. If you're pregnant, COVID can affect that as well. Your lungs in the ICU. And so going on and on. So I just wanted people to get them to see a whole total picture that COVID is not just a virus that causes you to cough and feel bad. There's a whole lot of other ramifications with that. And so that's what we were trying to do, just to educate.
So talk a little bit about where you went to medical school.
Yes.
And just kind of the focus area of the demographic, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure. I went to medical school at Meharry Medical College in Nashville, Tennessee, which is the number one producer of African-American physicians, dentists, and PhDs in the country.
Amen.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that we spend a lot of time doing here on Kennedy for Alabama is just clarifying and making sure the little listening audiences know what is underneath the umbrella of the historically black college and university.
Of course.
Right? Because I know a lot of times there are some assumptions that are out there that aren't necessarily valid. And whether it is what you're talking about with the path that you took or what the path was that Aquilin took, that it's just very interesting to source the number of folks who have had success and being able to source them back to that HBCU foundation.
Without a doubt.
So we got about 3 minutes before we go to the break here. So from the perspective of what you're doing in the medical society,
yes,
right? So what's the kind of focus of that particular organization and how are you leveraging that to get the word out about COVID?
Oh, very good. So as president of the medical society, our main goal right now is targeting our community on educating them about the vaccine and then working together with the different hospitals across Mobile County and talking so they can talk to each other. This started with the president before me, Dr. Koulianos, who is now the vice president of the Medical Association of State of Alabama.
Okay.
He brought all four of those hospitals together, including Alta Point, to talk to each other. Do you have enough supplies? What are you guys doing with how many people are in your ICUs? What's going on in your emergency rooms? Do you need enough PPE? So it's enough to start talking to them and figure out what do you need in terms of, do you have enough remdesivir? Or what about the monoclonal antibodies? Do you have enough here? And some of the hospitals will give to another hospital if they were out. And
yeah.
So it was really good. So a lot of collaboration. We are still supporting our physicians 1,000%. We have a great physician mental health awareness program where we send our physicians who need it to therapy. Because this has been horrible for our doctors.
I can't even imagine
yes.
what the healthcare providers had to go through, kind of being in those proverbial trenches every single day.
Correct.
So to talk a little bit more about the mental health aspect. And so what are you seeing in your community? What resources do you need? How can we help?
Very good. So I think there definitely needs to be a lot more mental health, especially in my kids. Because mm-hmm. the kids are, I find them to be more depressed, of course, because they've been isolated for a whole year.
Wow.
And so having them to come out and they're just really sad. And so I've had several that had to be admitted for psychiatric treatment.
Okay.
So we definitely need to strengthen our mental health among our kids, also among just us in general, just our adults and people in the community, and stop the stigma. Right? Because
mm-hmm.
nothing is wrong with therapy. I tell people therapy is mental spa, so consider that. And that nothing is wrong if you need to seek help, because this is something we've never been through before
right.
and hopefully won't again.
You know, it's interesting when we think about those aspects of it, and particularly in the younger people in our society and who need that social contact and that
yes.
interaction. And how challenging it must have been for them to just to be cut off from all of that.
Correct.
Particularly, you know, when you think about from an education standpoint.
Oh, yes.
And the amount of time that they ended up being out of school before we were able to kind of adjust and get pointed back in the right direction. So how long is your term as president?
Yep, it's just for a year. So I'll be finished in December.
All right. Well, that is definitely good that you had the opportunity to serve in that capacity. So we're actually going to come to the bottom half of the hour break here. Do you have a little bit more time to stay with us?
Of course.
Well, for those of you who may just now be tuning in, we started off Kennedy for Alabama, talking to Representative Anthony Daniels from the northern part of the state. And now we've had the opportunity to start a conversation here with Dr. Nina Ford Johnson. So what we're going to do right now is we are going to go to the bottom half of the hour break, and then we will continue our conversation on the other side. This is Robert Kennedy Jr., and you are listening to Kennedy for Alabama.
Welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. Now let's have a real conversation about what's going on in our Alabama communities. Once again, your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
And welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. For those of you who are just joining us, before we went to the break, we had started the conversation with Dr. Nina Ford Johnson as an extension of a conversation we started with Representative Anthony Daniels about COVID. Impacts in the community, et cetera, et cetera. So actually what I'd like to do right quick, if it's okay with you, Dr. Johnson,
is
I want to talk about one of the other hats that you wear, because here at Kennedy for Alabama, we are a Christian-based family, and we like to talk a little bit about our spiritual journey from time to time. So can you talk just a little bit about being a first lady?
Yes. So as a pastor's wife, It's amazing to be able to pray for people and to be a servant. It's not glamorous as people like to make it out to be. Many times I've had to talk with my husband about certain serious things or some things he won't even tell me about.
Mm-hmm.
But still have to pray for them and be there for the members and so it's a wonderful experience as well.
Yeah.
And through this, my prayer life and my life, my relationship with Christ has definitely been strengthened.
Mm-hmm.
Because you should see my prayer journal I write every night, and all these names. I'm like, God, I can't stop writing. There's so many people to pray for, and to call people, you know, at their lowest hour, but also at their best hour too.
Right.
That's
right.
Also a great thing, and seeing babies born and all that other stuff. So, it's been a joy.
You know, it's interesting because we spend so much time in our public-facing lives talking about what we do from the community service perspective or what we do from the day jobs perspective. But we know that ultimately we're on that journey to Judgment Day.
Yes.
And it's what we do in our daily lives, operating under the umbrella of the Great Commandments, loving God, loving our neighbor. That's really the thing that's most important.
Correct.
You know.
And, you know, let me just add one thing, too, is I have watched a pastor or two in my life.
Yes.
and their families. And I know, as you just described, the weight, you basically are, you're taking on the weight.
Yes.
Of many, because that's what we've always been asked to do is, you know, to give this up to God, give this up to God. And certainly the pastor is not God.
Right.
But the pastor prays with you and for you as well. And when you talked about mental health a moment ago, that's something that one of my pastors has talked about quite a bit. And so one thing I would ask everyone to do is pray for your pastors, because your pastors, we have our own issues, but your pastors have everybody's issues. And they need mental health support and prayer as well. So please, let's just keep that in mind.
Excellent.
All right. Well, thank you for sharing that, Aquilin. Thank you for sharing that, Dr. Johnson. So I think now we're going to go to the phone lines, and then we'll continue our conversation here about COVID. Hello, you're on the line with Kennedy for Alabama.
Good evening. This is Scott Hodenstein.
Hey, Scott, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Oh, man, I am blessed as always. Very good to hear your voice as always. For the FM Talk 65 listening audience and also for our friends at WVNN up in Huntsville, Scott Hottenstein is one of my classmates from the U.S. Naval Academy, calling us from the Sunshine State of Florida.
I appreciate being able to join in.
So Scott, when you and I were texting earlier, the reason why I wanted you to call in was from your perspective as a middle school teacher in the state of Florida. And just kind of what were the things that you and your peer group were thinking about during the early days of COVID and trying to figure out, you know, how to teach, how to protect and keep people safe, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, so last year it kind of felt like we were building the airplane as we were flying it when it came to COVID. We went home on spring break and never came back.
Wow.
Some of us still haven't gone back to person-to-person classes. Unfortunately, it seemed that a lot of the planning was coming from the top down, while the leadership was from the bottom up.
Interesting.
And what I mean by that is teachers weren't given the chance to to be creative in keeping those relationships with their students going. And I think a lot of students suffered both academically and with mental health.
Do you think any of that was driven by the politics of the day, or do you think that it was just, you know, positive intent gone awry because at the very beginning, nobody really knew what they were doing?
I think earlier in the show, you talked about how COVID-19 became politicized.
Yep.
And once it did, it was hard to come to some policy conclusions that we needed.
Okay.
And it became a political football.
Right.
Like, should classes be face-to-face,
right,
or should they be online? And instead of letting teachers and parents figure it out, that power was taken away because it was a political issue,
gotcha,
not like a what's best for the students issue.
Gotcha, gotcha. So as you think about where we are now, and I know you've recently been elected into leadership for an organization that represents teachers. Can you just take a minute and tell us what that is, just so we have the correct frame of reference?
So I was just elected president of the Democratic Public Education Caucus of Florida.
Okay.
So that represents all public education issues throughout the state of Florida, from pre-K all the way through college. So it's not just teachers. We represent parents and students and teachers and quite a few grandparents who've joined because they're worried about their grandkids' future.
Exactly. And the reason why I wanted you to highlight that, Scott, is because while we are based here in Mobile, thanks to the extremely powerful new transmitter that Sean Sullivan bought for the station, we actually know that we have a spillover into the Sunshine State of Florida as well. So I want to make sure our listeners over in Florida are understanding that you are representing the entire state of Florida.
Hello, Pensacola. I hope to be out there in person sometime soon.
Indeed, indeed. So I'll ask you this question first, and then I'll throw it over to Dr. Johnson as well. So now that we have a year of learning under our belts, right? And sure, there's still the backdrop of some of the political implications of education and public policy going forward. But from your peer group and the folks that you talk to every day within the organization, how are folks feeling about being back in the classroom? And what are, if any, concerns that they have either about themselves or the students who are returning to school?
So a lot of parents and teachers and even a couple of students are kind of asking that question. And what's popping up right now as we get ready for the 21-22 school year is this Delta variant. And the fact that you have some parts of the population who are not vaccinated. I think in Hillsborough County, where I live, the Tampa, Florida area,
right,
it's about 50-50. I think in Mobile County, I looked it up. I don't know how accurate. It's about 1 in 3, about 34%.
Gotcha.
And, of course, vaccinations haven't been offered to 12 and younger. So, mm-hmm, actually, I'd like to ask the doctor what her advice is on how we should view bringing students back face-to-face with the Delta variant.
Yeah, That's a good question, Scott. And thank you so much. And congratulations on your new position.
Thank you.
So I tell my parents that majority of the time, what I see is that when a child gets contracted or gets COVID, it's not from the school system. It's usually from an adult or a parent who's been out there and been a little reckless, or they've gotten sick and they've brought it home. Now, I have seen a couple of cases, and I stumbled up on one today where a child got sick because of someone was sick in the classroom, another child was. But for the most part, that's not the case I've seen. So over 90% of the cases I've seen of children have been from a family member. And so I tell parents, I think that I feel relatively more safe for children to return back to school. But however, when the vaccination is time for children to get vaccinated, and we know the vaccination rates for children 12 and up are pretty dismal. Definitely worse than it is for adults. Last time I saw is anywhere between 4 to 7% of those kids have been vaccinated so far against COVID. But I still feel that we'll be able to return to school okay. Even given the fact that most of the children who I've seen recover or have COVID have recovered fine, there have been some long haulers, like Representative Daniels with the fatigue and the bad migraine headaches he's talked about. I have several kids who are going through that right now who were positive for COVID earlier this year. And so, but we see less of that with children, and children are very, very resilient. And so I'm more concerned with their mental health and their school and their academics than I am from health due to COVID. But it's a fine line. It's a very fine line.
Gotcha. Let me ask you one follow-on question before I throw back to Scott. So the Delta variant, folks have been talking a lot about that in the news.
Yes.
So what are you guys seeing from a comparative standpoint? Are you more concerned, less concerned? What are your general thoughts at this point in time?
Definitely more concerned. It is more infectious, more contagious than it is. But that's what viruses do. They do their best to try to replicate and change it up on us. But the good thing about this Pfizer vaccine and Moderna vaccine, it fights against the Delta variant. So it works against it. So it is still safe against the Delta variant. So that's the good news.
Yeah, yeah, that is very good news to hear. Scott, what other concerns are you hearing from the folks in your organization about the future of education?
Well, in Florida, we're dealing with a really poor legislative session. It was very much an anti-public education session, an expansion of vouchers, an expansion of charter schools, and then, you know, just kind of, I'm trying to find a different word for stupid, but I can't come up with one. Just stupid legislation,
right?
Concerning academic freedom. We're going to survey all of our college professors to make sure that we have a diversity of intellectual viewpoints in college.
We've had a
new rule about you can't teach critical race theory in schools when it wasn't being taught in the first place, but they put this rule in effect a month ago.
Right.
And there's a lot of culture war kind of stuff, which, quite frankly, we don't need in public education.
Right.
And that's what we're looking at from now through 2022, looking at next year's legislative session and then the elections.
Hey, Scott, do you have a few minutes to stay with us beyond the next break?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, we're going to go to our three-quarter of the hour break, and we will see you guys here on the other side. You're listening to Kennedy for Alabama.
Welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. Now let's have a real conversation about what's going on in our Alabama communities. Once again, your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
Welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. So coming out of the last segment, we had the opportunity to talk to both Mr. Scott Hottenstein and Dr. Nina Ford Johnson, and we were kind of swinging back and forth through a conversation about the implications of COVID in our public schools. And then we had a little bit of a conversation just what was happening in the Florida legislative session with education as well. So we're going to go back to the phone lines. We're going to see if we still have Scott Hottenstein. Scott, you still there?
I'm still here.
Okay. Well, as we were talking about during the break, you said you had about 10 more questions that you wanted to ask Dr. Johnson. So let's just start with one and go from there.
What about masks in the classroom for the upcoming year?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I'm part of the crowd who still likes wearing masks in public places.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it would definitely be beneficial for especially those teenagers, right, and those middle schoolers. The elementary schools, I'm not too concerned about them because they tend to, I don't want to say get less sick, but it's those high schoolers I get concerned about because they have jobs and they're going here and they're going there.
Yeah.
And so they've been everywhere, even during this pandemic. And so that's why I think for them to wear a mask, I still recommend it. And as much as we can for the little ones as well, but that's just my perspective, my opinion.
You know, it's interesting because the mask thing caused a whole bunch of consternation.
Sure.
You know, when you start talking about the being optional versus being voluntary and who was enforcing it and some of the backlash against people who were enforcing it because it was their job and then people being inconsiderate, et cetera, et cetera. Again, just another one of those things that got political.
Right. And it should not have been.
It was unfortunate. Absolutely. So go ahead, Scott.
One of the benefits, actually, of the masks, and this isn't even COVID related, all the teachers I know from the past year said, you know, I didn't get the sniffles and, mm-hmm. you know, I didn't get the normal flu or anything like that. Because everyone who did go back to school face-to-face were wearing masks and practicing great hygiene habits.
And social distancing.
So that's one of the things maybe we've learned we could continue to do, irregardless of COVID, just practice better hygiene.
And the one that we actually talk about in my day job a lot is if you're sick, you probably don't need to be going to work. So if you could, you know, maybe stay away from folks there as well. So one other thing actually came up when Sean Sullivan and I were ping-ponging back and forth on the Midday Mobile show. He actually brought up a proposal from the Biden administration to kind of go door-to-door and try to get people COVID-19 shots if they needed it. I just wanted to throw that to you, Scott. I know you had some ideas about how you could probably integrate COVID-19 distribution into some of the PTA activities, et cetera, et cetera. What did you think about this concept of going the next step and going door to door?
I mean, that's pretty concierge service going door to door. I think if we got to meet the people where they're at,
mm-hmm.
but even if we go door to door, what's the reluctance? From the Florida perspective, if you want a vaccine now, you can get it. There's mm-hmm. nothing preventing anyone from getting a vaccine unless you have transportation issues.
Of course.
In which case, door-to-door might help. So I think it's education, and I don't know what it is because we've done a lot of education. You know, there's some block that some people, whether it's for political reasons, education reasons, transportation reasons, I think going door to door only gets you the people who don't have transportation.
Right.
I think some people just don't want to get one for whatever reason.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's understandable. You know, one of the other things that I was thinking about, and this was a lot less from a domestic standpoint and more from an international one, is we know there was a tragedy that happened in Haiti where their leader actually was assassinated. And one of the things that actually came out, not related to that story but tangentially, was the fact that there were no people in Haiti who had currently gotten the vaccine. And so that often has me thinking about what are the implications internationally. If we even go back to what Dr. Johnson said at the beginning about when it was identified as being in Wuhan, that we knew invariably was going to get here. So is there an argument that says maybe we need to be more proactive in terms of helping nations like Haiti to prevent it from coming back here? So do you have any thoughts on that, Dr. Johnson?
Definitely. Definitely. I think we need – I don't have a problem with going to door to door. Because maybe if that can talk to them and convince them, like, hey, this is why you should get it. Maybe they can – if they hear it from the horse's mouth, maybe that'll convince them.
Mm-hmm.
Or going to other different countries where the vaccine is not – out there, like
right.
Haiti or some of the countries in Africa or India was hit so bad.
Oh, my gosh, wasn't it?
Our chief medical officer at Providence lost his father to COVID. Despite him taking care of all those COVID victims, for to him to lose his own father like that, that hurt so bad.
Indeed.
So we need to go out there. The more, the better.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. No doubt about that whatsoever. So Scott, we've only got about 2 minutes left before the end of the show. So what is going to kind of be the focus of your time as the president of the organization? What are you going to find yourself focusing on here?
Ultimately, the goal is to elect better public education representatives, senators, school board members, governors. We need our elected officials to support public education.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
absolutely
what we're focused on between now and November 2022.
Absolutely. Well, Scott, thanks a lot for that. We really appreciate you calling in. Give our love to the family. We'll talk to you soon.
Same to you and Aquilin.
Okay. And Dr. Johnson, we got about a minute left. So any final parting thoughts that you would actually like to share with the listening audience?
Yeah, go ahead and get vaccinated. It's never too late. Even if you've had COVID before, that's fine. We'll still give you the vaccine. Protect yourself. Protect your family members. Protect your neighbors. Protect the person at the grocery store. It's not just about us anymore. We have to start thinking like a community.
Mm-hmm.
Your community is your family.
Absolutely. And one of the questions that I got asked today as well was, you know, if something happened, would I be advocating for a lockdown once again? And I said, you know, being in the type of business that's customer-facing, I don't necessarily see us going back to what we were at in March of 2020. And I think part of the way that we prevent ourselves from even having that become a conversation is by continuing to get a larger critical mass of people vaccinated. So, Dr. Johnson, thank you so much for spending some time with us tonight.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks to Representative Daniels, who led us off at the top of the hour. And thank you to the listening audience for tuning in. Until this time next week, my name is Robert Kennedy Jr., and this is Kennedy for Alabama.